ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into another edition of Nosebleeds, the official and exclusive MLB podcast here at WFUV Sports. How's it going, everybody? Will Talent with you, joined alongside Nick Palmer and Lauren Mondarulli. And guys, great start for at least one of the teams here in the Big Apple, and that is the New York Yankees. Best record in not only the American League, but in Major League Baseball, or at least tied with the Philadelphia Phillies. It's a good place to be, though, in the approaching mid-June slate. And we'll get into the Yankees in just a brief second. June is kind of a tough month for the Yankees. We'll really get to see their true colors and if they can compete against some of these big bashers that they're playing this summer, including a lot of division rivals. And after the Yankees, we'll segue over to Queens and talk about the New York Metropolitans over there and everything that is going on. It hasn't looked all that good, but there's still time and hope, as the Mets faithful would back me on. Only three games out of a wild card spot, too. And we'll get into their latest series against the Washington Nationals that'll wrap up today. And then we'll go around the MLB. Some bad news for the Houston Astros as their season continues to kind of falter before it could even get started. And Kansas City Royals making a really, really strong case for at least a wild card spot. And we all know how the American League Central goes. It's kind of frisky. It's really anyone's division. And then overall, we'll talk about just a very brief opener of the upcoming trade deadline. But before we get into everything, Nick, Lauren, how are you guys doing today?
Can I just say, your beard looks fantastic today, Will.
Thank you.
Like,
so
it is
much.
Growing in really nicely. I know this is an audio podcast, but man, you look absolutely fantastic. Lauren, it's nice to finally talk to you and be on a podcast with you. This is going to be fun. I'm going to the Yankees game after this. It's Juan Soto basketball jersey night, so that's why I'm hoping to get there a little early. It should be good, so I'm looking forward to this.
I'm also super excited for this episode. We have a lot of great stuff to talk about, so I'm just excited to get into it with you guys.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the kind words, Nick. I decided to let it grow. We were going to trim it out, but we're going to let it eat. We're going to let the big dog
eat. Let it eat, baby.
We'll just see where it goes. But let's talk some baseball, guys, and let's start over in the Bronx with those New York Yankees that just came off of a big win yesterday, 5-1 over the Minnesota Twins, a franchise they continue to really kind of own since all three of us were born,
O-2.
To be honest.
0-2 is the year. Yeah. Hold on. I just sat on this. Hold on. Okay. Here it is. 120-44 against them since 2002.
Man, I didn't know it was like
that. Wow.
It's like that.
I knew they had some good success. I didn't know it was like that. That's crazy.
Oh, it's like that, Will.
Yeah. But before the Twins came to town, and a little bit after the Yankees swept them in Minnesota, they went on a 9-game West Coast trip. And we all know the same for those West Coast teams when they come to the East Coast. It's just a big difference. It's a big shift. And specifically for the Yankees, it's tougher when you got to go on those big lengthy road trips out West. The time difference, the jet lag, all of those factor into play and performance. The Yanks, 9 games, they go 7-2. Can't give you the specific year. Maybe you guys have it, but that was one of their better record-wise road trips of the last 30 years or so going to the West Coast. That was a really, really fun 9 games to watch, and it ended with just an exclamation point of a win against the San Francisco Giants and against one of the more elite closers in Major League Baseball in Camilo Doval. The Giants finally had a lead against the Yankees, and the Yanks scored 4 unanswered to win the Sunday matinee. But guys, overall, I'll start with you, Lauren. That West Coast trip overall, good teams like San Diego, middle of the road to bottom of the barrel teams like Anaheim. Still, they give, I said Anaheim, wow, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They always kind of give the Yankees fits in LA. And then the Giants, a 500 team, but still another tough team. But Lauren, what are your overall takeaways from the very successful road trip?
I really am focusing on the lineup from this past road trip. We knew going into the season how dangerous this lineup was going to be. And that first game against San Diego, you saw the power trio, Soto, Judge, and Stanton, all homering off Yu Darvish in the same inning, which is just kind of like what you really were hoping for when you saw these big three names together, one after another in the lineup. So it was just really incredible to finally see that play out, especially since we've already seen them this season homer in the same game, at like all three of them at the same game, which was against the Astros in early May. But as we'll talk about later on, the Astros are not the team that they once were. So to see this against a San Diego team in an 8-0 win was just so incredible. And then I just want to jump over to Judge playing in Oracle Park for the first time after he turned down that huge contract last season. It really just showed the Giants what they missed out on. And he finished the series for 6-for-10 with 3 home runs in that park, which is such a difficult park to homer in. But like, he made it look so simple. And then you could just see them like battling injuries as they came, with Clark Schmidt devastating loss for the Yankees. And then also John Birdie after he like fell to the ground running to first. And they're like bounced back from that really nicely, which was something that they needed to improve upon last season.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. That was a great, great road trip. I was actually fortunate enough to cover one of the games in Anaheim. I live in Los Angeles, so I got the chance to drive down the 5 freeway. I do actually, I filmed a little vlog. I'll send that over to you, Will, for the TikTok postings.
Awesome. Some content.
Oh, of course, some content for the boys. Yeah, that was an excellent road trip. I thought, you know, they face a lot of good pitchers. I mean, Cease and Darvish in San Diego. Tyler Anderson in Anaheim is having a sneaky, excellent year. I think he has like a 2.3 ERA or something like that, former Dodger. And then, of course, going into San Francisco, and even though Snell went down in the 5th inning with something that seemed like a side injury, he was holding his side, took care of business there. Doval kind of having a sneaky bad year too. I think his ERA is around 4 or something this year, and certainly Soto's home run had something to do with that. But yeah, echoing everything you said, Lauren, the lineup was firing on all cylinders. Judge was absolutely insane in the series. Unfortunately, Volpe's 21-game hitting streak did come to an end in Anaheim, but the on-base streak also continues. I believe Judge and Volpe are both at 30 coming into today. Something crazy like that. So. Okay, there you go. So, I mean, they're looking so good. And up and down the lineup, really, I can't think of anyone who's not doing their job, except for maybe Austin Wells has been struggling a little bit. But when you're complaining about an 8-hole hitter and, you know, DJ's on his way back, there's absolutely nothing to complain about. And Cole is on his way back as well. So everything is good in Yankee land. I can't really think of a negative thing to say about this team right now. And that's rare. That's rare.
Well, you know, with Austin Wells too, still in his first full season, and, you know, you want to see that offensive production. That's where it was at when he was in college at Arizona. And that's where he projected when the Yankees took him in the first round in 2020. But I really have liked Wells's at bats, even if there's not a super, you know, ton of production. And his defense, he's got one of the better mentors to have in the defensive department, a department in which Wells was kind of written off of right when he was drafted. And I've been really satisfied with his defense. He's made a lot of strides. Yeah. I'm not really too concerned about him. I say still just give him those reps, give him those shots, see what happens. He's a good lefty to have in the lineup as well, balances it out. But like you're both saying, very complete road trip, even with the injuries of Clark Schmidt and John Birdie. Clark Schmidt probably going to be out till, I would say, August. That's a bummer. But like you said, Nick, getting Gerrit Cole back. We'll talk about his rehab start in Somerset last night in just a minute here. But John Birdie, as Lauren pointed out, that's also a sneaky bad loss for the bench, because John Birdie can platoon for Oswaldo Cabrera and DJ LeMahieu, or he can come off the bench as a speedster. At his age, I believe he is turning 35 if he's not already 35, and he's got the second most stolen bases on the team. He's the kind of player that the Yankees need on their bench, and I'll definitely mention it a little bit once we talk about what we think for the Yankees at the trade deadline. But overall, a great road trip, a good start to the homestand, and they will welcome the Dodgers this weekend. Going to be the series of the year. Nick Palmer will be in attendance for two of those? All three of those?
All three, baby. All three.
All three. Him and I will be there on Sunday as well for Sunday Night Baseball. That's going to be very exciting. But first and foremost, it's going to be a tough series. And that's really when June gets kind of tough for the Yankees. But they continue to roll. And someone who just continues to roll is Luis Gil. Just incredible stuff, especially when it's at a point where graphics are shown of him and the rest of the players on those graphics, there's only black and white images. There was a graphic, besides Fernando Valenzuela, do not want to disrespect, but there's,
absolutely not.
You know, Luis Gil has the, I guess, best restored picture of anybody that he's, I guess, tallying the same kind of numbers as. I think Christy Mathewson was on that list, and he debuted in like the 1910s. So Luis Gil has been absolutely incredible. 12 starts, 8-1, and he leads at least the American League. I'll have to double check it. Maybe Major League Baseball, though, with a 1.82 ERA. And the reason I'm questioning Major League Baseball is because Shoto Imanaga from the Cubs had a kind of a rough start the other day, and it inflated that ERA that was well under one. But still having a great season nonetheless. But Luis Gil in 69 1/3 innings pitched, guys, 85 strikeouts to 34 walks. And those walks, they I guess you could say they kind of look like a lot right now, but they're really not, because he limits them with each start. They're in the early stages of the season, you would expect Gil to walk at least four guys, and he walked seven guys against Toronto. Mm-hmm. But now he just looks a lot more looser out there and a lot more composed. He also leads Major League Baseball in hits per nine with 3.9. If I remember correctly, he's still the leader by a landslide in batting average against, which was the last time I checked was in the 120s. So I want to ask Nick, love what he's doing. He's probably going to be on an innings limit. He just turned 26 years old, still, you know, recovering from Tommy John surgery, despite all of the success. We know what happens post All-Star break too. Even if a team remains consistent, they're never usually the same team as they were in the first half. Really special teams are like that. Maybe the Yankees will be that way. We don't know yet. We got to get to the All-Star break. But is the kind of success that Luis Gil has had, is this sustainable in your eyes for the entirety of this season?
So my brother is a big Yankee hater, and so he will love to say, Luis Gil is a flash in the pan. It's not sustainable. He's not going to be able to do this. The only thing about him that's good is his fastball. That's what everyone keeps saying, but that's not true if you watch him pitch. His changeup is elite. It is an elite pitch. He struggles to throw it for strikes sometimes, but it doesn't matter when his fastball locates so well. You can get him to chase out of the zone. And also his slider is great as well. No one talks about Luis Gil's slider. So he has three complete weapons that he can use against anyone. And I think I was watching the Yankee game, and I forget who said it, but they phrased it very well. They said, it's hard to get hits off of Luis Gil. The way he hurts himself is when he walks people. That's why he's in the 13th percentile of walks. And you're right, it does hurt him from time to time, but he also does limit it to certain amounts. He is in the 95th percentile of hard hit percentage. Nobody hits this dude hard at all. He is so good at missing the barrel of the bat. He strikes out a million people. So, yeah, you know, you can complain about the walks all you want, but when he's missing the bat like he does, it really doesn't matter, and the stats really speak for themselves.
I think that what the Yankees are doing with Luis Gil right now, they're already kind of limiting him to 6 innings, it seems like. In all of the month of May, he pitched consistently about 6 innings, 6 1/3, 6 2/3. There was only one game where he pitched 8 innings in May, and that was against the Angels in a 2-1 win on their West Coast trip. So I understand why people are getting scared, because it seems like he's pitching more. But if we look back to the beginning of the season, in April, he was pitching 4 to 5 innings, and that was it. And now if I think he consistently pitches 6 innings and then relies on the bullpen, which has been so trusted with the Yankees for the past couple seasons, he'll be okay. And then you also have the offense to lean on, and they have been super duper hot. And if one person has a slump in their bat, someone else will pick them up, because we've seen that time and time again. Look at Rizzo right now. He's slumping right now, but everyone else is picking him up. And then when someone else is slumping, Rizzo will be back to pick him up. So there's always someone else to lean on. And I think that's also something really important to focus on, that Luis Gil will be able to sustain this for the rest of the season.
That's a great point, Lauren, that this rotation has been that good that there hasn't been many holes. So say, for instance, you do lose Luis Gil in his role now, not by, fault of his own, just for the Yankees to protect him for the future, they still have a very sturdy rotation. And let's say Clark Schmidt comes back, he would be slotted to come back around the time where they would probably shut Gil down in the rotation and move him to a role with Luke Weaver as a long relief pitcher. Because if, Luis Gil remains this good and consistent, there's no reason to continue or to alter his routine. I know he's recovering from Tommy John. He's 26 years old, but trying to win a World Series this year, especially with the kind of contracts that you're going to have to sign in the offseason. So you gotta fire on all cylinders, and Luis Gil is definitely firing on all cylinders. And another good note too, Lauren, about the innings pitched. A lot of that, I would say, had to do with how many pitches he was throwing in those 4 to 5 inning starts, because in April he was definitely walking a lot more batters per game, and that has significantly dropped. And to Nick's point, it has a lot to do with the location of his fastball. He's just incredible at using all four quadrants of the zone with his fastball. It's unbelievable. Goes outside the zone and just enough to make you chase when it's a ball, but then can also carve you up upstairs and downstairs in the zone. He, like you were saying, Nick, people really do kind of just tab that fastball on him, but you got to watch the film, because he is a lot more than just that fastball. And that slider was not there 2 years ago, and it wasn't really there in April. He was still kind of a two-pitch pitcher, and he incorporated it a lot more, and it's really paid off for him. Wait till he, gets more innings under his belt. Maybe a fourth pitch comes about. We'll see. It could be another fastball, because he's obviously a high velo kind of guy. Could be a little bit of a sinker. Could be a little bit of a cutter. That's all for the foreseeable future, not so much this season, but unbelievable stuff. And as we were mentioning Luis Gil, Sarah Langs actually just tweeted his career opponent's batting average against, and it's 153 in his career. I don't know what the season is. I don't even know how many hits the Twins got yesterday against him. It wasn't many, but I know that much.
His season XBA is 175, which is good for the 98th percentile.
That's unbelievable, man.
It's unbelievable. It's really, absolutely really fantastic.
Pitching well. It's like not even gassing him up. He's really pitching that well. But his 153 opponent's batting average is the lowest mark through a pitcher's first 19 career starts in the live ball era, which started in 1920, hence all of the black and white still pictures that are next to Luis Gil in a lot of these statistical graphics. But Luis Gil, definitely a lot more than just a five starter for the Yanks. And talking about the rotation in order, let's talk about the ace. Gerrit Cole, yesterday, gets the rehab assignment for the Somerset Patriots, and it was phenomenal. Phenomenal start for Gerrit Cole. He said that he felt good. That's all you really want to hear. He's very amped to get back, and I love that. I'm a little bit more, I guess, conservative in this way, where I really just want him to stay healthy. I love that he wants to get back and pitch, and he's firing. Like, he was at 96 in his first bullpen back, and Matt Blake had to tone him down a little bit, and he was resistant. But I love that, because that's your ace. That's the horse. It's, you know, you need him, though. You need him so bad. And with his kind of injury, you just want to be careful. But he knows his body better than anybody, and he is very, very confident in how good he feels. 3 1/3 innings pitched, 2 hits, no runs, no walks, 5 strikeouts. Get him in, get him out for Somerset yesterday. And he looked great. He looked great in that start. And Nick, I just, what is it going to mean for this rotation and for the potential trade deadline when Gerrit Cole comes back in, I would say potentially, what's today? Day of recording is June 5th. We'll say about 10 days.
Well, the great thing is that you don't really need him right now, because the rotation is doing so well on its own. So that gives you the leeway, because Garrett's not going to want to sit on the sidelines for a long time, but you can let him. That's the thing. So you're right, where Matt Blake does sort of need to like tone him down and say, hey, we need you to come back at 100%, but he looks 100%. I watched his post-game interview after the Somerset game. You're right. He looked amped. Wasn't he pitching to Ben Rortbett too? And we know that they have like a really funny relationship.
I think so. Yeah. He was pitching to somebody familiar. That, if it was Ben Rortbett, that is so funny.
I think it was Ben Rortbett, which is really funny because we've watched him yell at Ben Rortbett in the dugout just a ton. So yeah, that was great. And yeah, he didn't really have a lot to say other than the fact that he felt good. And of course he does the Garrett thing where after the game he'll tell you what all of his mistakes were. He'll be like, yeah, I think the fastball felt pretty good. I missed some breaking balls over the plate. I missed one that he kind of missed and one that he got a hold of, but other than that I thought it was pretty good. And then that's just classic Garrett right there, and I'm hoping for classic Garrett, because with Clark going down, it'd be nice to have like a third ace in our rotation, because that's what it feels like right now. It feels like anyone can go out there and put up 7 strong innings, whether that's Heal, Cortez at home, not on the road. Cortez is not good on the road for some reason. Clark is coming back. Rodon this year, I thought, has been fine. He's been serviceable. And Stroman has been very good also. I can't see an area where I don't feel good about someone going out on the bump, unless it's Nestor on the road, but that'll fix itself in time.
Nick, as you said, we don't need him right now. So that's why I personally want to see 2 more rehab assignments from Gerrit Cole. His goal is 40 to 50 pitches. He got 45. I want to see him get 60 and then 75. And then I'll be comfortable with him coming back to the Bronx, pitching, 5 to 6 innings in a real game, not the 3 1/3, because that's not going to be sustainable in the long run for the Yankees. You want to see him for the innings, and he's not going to be happy if you take him out after 3 1/3 in the majors. Similar to Luis Heal, I think the Yankees are like doing a really good job at slowly progressing him after injuries. And I just, like you guys were saying, Matt Blake, make sure that he's not going over and he's comfortable. But you also have to recognize that this injury is something Gerrit Cole has dealt with for years now. Back in 2016 with the Pirates, his season ended because of elbow inflammation. So, he's felt this before, and he seems really, really excited to come back as soon as it's safely possible.
Yeah, it was just good to see how confident he was in just the 3 1/3. But you're right, Lauren, you definitely want to see a bit of a progression in these rehab assignments. And I'm sure he'll get there. I could definitely see him getting to at least 3, because I can't even remember the last time he pitched in a game. So you want to see some stuff out of him. And I think you're also right there, Lauren, with a 5 to 6 innings to start, and then he'll probably get stretched out more. And as you were saying too, Nick, they don't need him so desperately. So 5 to 6 innings, and then you got that bullpen, which has been the number one bullpen in all of baseball. And you can really work Gerrit Cole up to where you need him to be, and you don't need him to be that AL Cy Young Award winner every single time he pitches. Even though he will give you that energy, you don't need him going 7, 8, every single time.
Right.
Let him build it up. Let him get there. And he will get there. He's a true professional. I see him working with Luis Gil. Once pitching coach Garrett Cole was done working with Luis Gil in Tampa Bay, that's kind of when Gil turned the Jets on, to be honest. And that's why Garrett makes the big bucks for sure. And to wrap up the Yankees, Garrett Cole will be kind of a trade deadline acquisition in a way. They don't need to go out and get a starting pitcher so desperately, even with Clark Schmidt down. I'm totally fine with them going with Cody Petit and Cody Morris for however long they need until Cole comes back. And then you have your five man right there. And then Clark comes back, and that's a six man. That's for a conversation for another time. So in a way, that's a deadline acquisition for the Yankees. But we'll keep this brief because it's still the first week of June, but it does kind of creep up on you unexpectedly. That is the trade deadline. And I'm going to say that the Yankees right now, the holes, because every team has holes, no matter how good they are, this team will need help in that bullpen. No matter how strong they've looked, they could use another arm, maybe two arms out there. And keep in mind, they will get Scott Efros back at some point, possibly Lou Trevino as well. But go out and get an arm that's hot right now. Don't even have to give up a ton off the major league roster at all. They shouldn't even touch major league roster, to be honest. The farm system, you probably won't have to give up a ton unless you're really looking for a big name out there. And the Yankees don't really need that right now. Still like over a month ago, anything can happen for the trade deadline. But if I'm the Yankees, 1-2, one would just be fine. Relief pitchers and a veteran infielder. Someone that's not going to get consistent at-bats whatsoever, but who is a good example? Like a Hedeny Echevarria-esque kind of player.
Oh my God.
Give me someone who will be adequate on the base paths. You're not even spending a dime on the bat. You're just spending on the ability to run the bases. And then whenever that's over, they go into the field and they're nails. Because this team has been good, but that infield defense has been shaky. They looked a lot better as of late, especially DJ LeMahieu. I really like how he's been moving, but he can never be deep enough. The outfield, I think, has good, really good depth to it. The infield also has solid depth to it, but champions got to be sturdy all the way around, and that's a very small hole. So patch it up where you can. Those are my two predictions. I don't have any players, just areas of need.
Yeah, I'm with you. Maybe a bullpen arm would be nice. Do we need another? Maybe. Okay. I would be all right with them going for like an elite bullpen arm, just to help them bridge the gap. Like
Clay. Yeah.
Just to help out Clay. Cause I don't know. I love Luke Weaver so much. Luke Weaver is excellent. He's a zesty little guy. Love him so much. I would love a strong setup, man. What if the Astros unload Ryan Pressly? What would we think about that?
I wouldn't be opposed. I don't know if they'd trade him to the Yankees, but he also hasn't had the best of seasons. But
right, that's what I'm saying, though, is like
buy low, and then he goes into a really good bullpen, so the pressure is not really on him as
start
much.
Start him off in like the sixth inning. He's not used to that. Have him build up, you know? Like, I would love that. I would love that from them.
Be a cool move.
I have a name, and it might have already come up, but I know I talked to my dad and my brothers about this. They say I'm insane. Gleyber Torres is entering his free agency. I, for years, hated how he plays second base. I think he makes the silliest plays. He makes the worst errors. He can make the most dangerous plays in the field perfectly. He can field a ground ball there. It goes right between his legs. Jason Dominguez, our center fielder, is coming back, so we're going to need to make room on our roster somehow. What if we say bye to Gleyber a little earlier than we expected, get DJ over at second, build him up a little bit more? Because, Will, as you were saying, I really liked how he's looking in the field. Him at second base is not a bad idea, and that'll be even better for his arm because he's not going to be making the throw from third to first. That's going to cause a lot of strain on him. If he moves to second, that's a lot easier of a throw. put Cabrera at third. Birdie will come back, switch that them out. Or you can put Birdie and LeMahieu and switch them out at second. Or, as you were saying before, get another veteran infielder to put in that mix as well.
Interesting. That's a hot take.
He's just starting to hit, though.
I love the hot
take. He's just starting to hit.
I love that we're getting takes off. And what I would say to that is I could see them, you know, flirting with the possibility so they could stockpile something in the farm system. However, Glaber is integral to this roster, no matter how good or bad he's been. I think I'd be more comfortable with it being Glaber and DJ rather than DJ and Cabrera, because I think Cabrera still needs some more just games played in general in the major leagues to be that beat. So I could personally be that confident in him. I really don't mind the take at all. It's definitely a conversation that came up a lot last year. And I think definitely you're not alone. Maybe your dad and your brothers make you feel alone for sure, Lauren, but I'm going to go out and say that you're not alone on that. I just think Glaber, if this is it for him as a Yankee, hypothetically, just let him walk. Just give him this year. Let him be that second baseman. And as you said, Nick, he is starting to hit. So he hit a home run last night. I know the mistakes in the infield are evident and sometimes glaring.
Brutal.
And it makes it seem as though he hasn't progressed from when he was like 21. But love Glaber. He's such a big part of this team. He's a big part of the team. And someone will pay him a lot of money, whether it's the Yankees or somebody else. But I don't mind that take, Lauren. I really don't.
Like how many years, though? How many years have we heard the trade Glaber talk? For how many years have we heard trade Glaber? Like four?
You know what? It's weird.
It's every year.
It moves in fluctuation. It's either don't trade him or you got to get rid of him now. And then it's back to, we got to extend him. So but it's like,
this is why we can't trade Glaber. We can't trade Glaber this year because he's playing for a contract.
Let him walk. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He's going to be playing his best ball, or at least trying to play his best ball coming forward. He's just starting to hit. And you're right. If I have no gripes with this Yankees team, but gosh darn it, if I see Oswaldo Cabrera at third base starting in the playoffs, I will be a little bit upset. He's just not ready for it yet. He's just not ready for it. I want to see DJ at third. I want to see Glaber at second. Hitting Glaber at second. That's what I – and if DJ is never the same again, then potentially I could see Oswaldo Cabrera playing. But I do not want him as option number one. But I respect the take, Lauren. I respect the take.
Absolutely. Cabrera just needs a little bit more time, and I think he'll get there. Yankees also have a lot of infield prospects that they can, see. Like, a prime example, Oswald Peraza. What's going to be the deal with him? I don't know. He could end up being the second base replacement next year if they let Glaber walk. But we will wait and see. The Yanks still the major league leaders after that talk that we just had. They still lead the major leagues in wins. How about that? Really, really good stuff. The Yanks playing really well. But let's go cross town now. Let's go over to Queens and let's talk about those Mets. Those New York Mets. They retired Dale Strawberry's number. There it is. They turned the apple into a strawberry for that day. But on the bright side, be a little less facetious, they did win the series against the Nationals. First series win since May 6th and 7th against St. Louis. And that's just kind of what's been going on with the Mets. There's been a lot that's gone down in between May 6th and June 5th. Christian Scott and Brett Beatty were sent down. Jorge Lopez had his whole thing and the misinterpretation, and that whole fiasco completely snowballed into a Met situation. It's just the best way I could put it. And I think a lot of Met fans would put it the same way, maybe even a little bit more harsher than that. But it's kind of all spiraling for this season. I've been on that side for the Mets this whole year. And that is, this is not the year to compete. You have a lot of guys that you're paying way too much money to that you try to have compete, and you won 100 games and you lost in the wild card series. And then you got rid of two of those guys and you still have three, and those three being four, actually. Edwin Diaz, five, really. Edwin Diaz, Brandon Nimmo, Francisco Lindor, and Starling Marte. You have to look about paying Pete Alonso. There's a lot of guys on the books for the Mets that they tried to push out a big time, we're going to take the NL East, but they just were not a complete team whatsoever. They paid their way to try to be better, and that just really doesn't work in sports whatsoever. You need to establish a culture. So they did that, and kind of, they're working on it. And what I mean by that is you got to start from within. The Mets have a top 10 farm system. I know Mets fans, you want them to win. You want them to make the playoffs. If you focus and prioritize on the farm system that you currently have, I could see a very solid future for this Mets team. Francisco Lindor will be there. I don't think Pete Alonso will be there, and we will get to that in just a second. But Lindor will be there. You have so many good prospects, pitching, infielders, outfielders. Some of them will hit. Some of them will pan out. Some of them won't. What it's going to take is making sure that you prioritize that farm system so those guys that you want to hit will hit. And then the potential guys you can trade for guys that are on existing major league rosters to make yourself a competitive team. That's how you build franchises. That is how you build teams. So the Mets, farm system, key. We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second because it's going to play a pivotal part as to what they decide to do for this trade deadline. But right now, currently on this June 5th, delayed against the Nationals, going for the sweep of Washington right now, who is two and a half ahead of them. How about that one? It's delayed.
Look at those Mets go, man.
It's something else, man. It really is. They officially released Omar Narvaez and Jorge Lopez today. But guys, overall as a team, there's just, there's not a lot there. There's just not a lot there other than
Vientos.
Vientos will be better when he gets like those consistent reps each and every day. He did so well, and then they sent him down back in April. The guys that I really want to hit on for the Mets right now are the guys on expiring contracts who are going to shape this trade deadline for them. Harrison Bader, JD Martinez, Luis Severino, and Pete Alonso. All four of those guys are going to be pivotal to what this team does for the trade deadline. But overall, they've been probably some of the best players for the Mets. Let's just talk about JD Martinez here for a second. 275 average,
326
OBP with a 792 OPS. He's got 36 hits, five of those being a home runs, eight doubles, and 15 RBIs, but he also had a delayed start to his season. So JD Martinez, solid investment. Luis Severino, also a solid investment. Start with you, Nick. What about this Mets team is just going wrong in your eyes, other than the obvious, I guess? What is the deal over in Queens, man?
Well, first of all, I'd like you to put some respect on Mark Vientos' name. He's hitting 339 this year and has been hitting very well recently. So shout out Mark Vientos.
Hey, I would like to see him get more playing time, and that's where Pete Alonso comes into the question. But
he's been playing almost every day recently. So, he went 1-for-3 last night against the Nats, 2-for-3, hit some big home runs recently. So, good for Vientos. The rest of this team is absolute horrendous garbage. Where do you start? Edwin Diaz is not Edwin Diaz anymore. They IL'd him. I thought it was a phantom IL stint. It very well could be right now.
Give him a breather.
But regardless, he's not very good. Adam Ottavino is who they've been turning to in late innings, him and Jake Diekman, which has just been an absolute atrocity. They blow so many games. I mean, they went on that losing streak in May. I mean, how many games was it? Three, four, five, six, seven, seven-game losing streak. I watched that entire series against the Dodgers. And, yeah, as you mentioned, Lopez throwing his glove over into the stands and then saying that the Mets are the worst effing team in the league. He says there was a translation issue, but he also doubled down on it too. So I don't know if he's just covering his tracks or whatever. I actually, in Anaheim, there are two press boxes in Anaheim. There's one behind the plate and there's one in right field. I was in the one in right field. It was just me and Jason Zillow there for the entire game. He's the Yankees PR guy. And I thought this would be a good chance for me to get to talk to him and get to know him. And I asked him about the situation because it had just happened the day prior. And I said, do you think the Mets handled it well by DFAing him right after? And he said, I think that was the right decision. But if I was Mets PR, I would have never let him speak to the media in the first place after throwing the glove into the stands.
It's a good answer.
And I said, that's a great answer, Jason. And I said, has anything like that happened to you on the Yankees side? And he said, yeah, the A-Rod steroids week was pretty brutal. And I was like, okay, that's pretty interesting. But that just shows you, I mean, Lopez's situation perfectly encapsulates what's going on with this team. They can't hit, they can't pitch, no clutch relievers. Nothing is going right for this team. And I just to think that last year they had Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer as their two aces and still couldn't get it done proves that this team does not have that dog in them. They just don't have the dog in them. That's all I've got to say.
Their hitting's just been awful, as you said, Nick. It's just hard to watch. I used to enjoy watching the Mets. I like switching between the Yankees and the Mets because I have both those channels in the metropolitan area. But I can't even go back and forth. I'd rather sit and watch the commercials on the Yankee game. But this past series against the Nationals, I didn't hate it. They outhit the Nationals 13-6. And in these two games so far, they've had a total of 26 hits and every single player has scored a hit, which is really exciting for them. And I'm not going to say it's like this is their turning point because it's not. We've seen the Mets on their highs and on their lows. I think this is just like a middle high ground and we'll see how today's game goes. Hopefully they get to play after this delay. But I have like in my notes here, big thanks to Harrison Bader and Pete Alonso for each homering yesterday to get that win. Because you saw in the ninth innings, like they gave up another run to the other team. And then the tying run was at the plate. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to blow this game and make it extra innings. Thank God they didn't. That was good. But I am really liking what David Peterson has to offer as a starting pitcher for them. You know, second start yesterday. And he's already returning healthily and he's improving his stats. In yesterday, he had 6 2/3 innings with 2 runs. And then his previous start, he had 5 innings pitch, allowed 3 runs. So obviously you want to see those runs decrease, but he's already doing so much better than like what the other Mets have been doing since they've been there all season.
David Peterson is an example of what the former farm direction was for the Mets. He was I really can't remember where he was specifically ranked, but he was a pretty highly touted prospect for them. And he's just been kind of this long reliever, fifth, sixth starter for them his whole career. And he's been great. But that's where I kind of want to turn the conversation back to, because the current play of the Mets, Mets fans don't even want to watch the Mets. That's just like where it's at. There's really nothing else to say other than they just have not been a good baseball team at all. They can't do anything on any side of the baseball. So that's where you have to turn your sights. Even though you're only a few games out of a wild card spot, you're not in it for this year. You're just not in it for this year. Jake Diekman and Adam Ottavino, as Nick was saying, have not.
And Reed Garrett, he fell back down to earth too. Remember like the first month when he had like a 1 ERA?
Yeah.
And Mets fans were going absolutely nuts. And now like their best reliever is Sean Reed Foley. Give me a break.
Yeah. Drew Smith is back too. And Brooks Raley's out for the year. You know, they have they got a lot of issues. They got a lot of issues. But guys like Jake Diekman and Adam Ottavino to spin this in a more positive light. And if you're a Mets fan, you don't want to hear this, but it is the direction for the team because you're not competing in this season. It's not happening. The Nationals were in a rebuild with multiple 100 loss seasons, and they are in a better spot than the Mets. Even if they don't finish with a better record than them, the Nationals have a better team, in my opinion. Better than the Marlins, but the Nationals are in a very solid position. And the thing with the Mets is that they can get to where the Nationals are because they're even deeper as a farm system. And where I mentioned Jake Diekman and Adam Ottavino, those guys aren't very, they're not very good right now. Maybe they get hot and they lower that ERA. Jake Diekman will forever, for the rest of his career, be a guy that is looked at unless his ERA is just that astronomically bad, which it's not great, but it's still tradable right now because he's a lefty. He's still pretty effective. If he's in the right spot, he can be a very solid relief pitcher. He did really well with Tampa Bay and helped get them to the postseason, even though they didn't do anything. Adam Ottavino can be the same way. These are guys that you could trade, potentially get something, a sliver. It won't be, you know, anything crazy. And they're off your books. You got some kind of value for them. You send them to a contender who needs bullpen depth, because that is what takes you all the way, is if you can round it all the way out on every aspect of the baseball. And the bullpen is one of the harder things to round out, especially come August and September when those guys are really taxed out there. You know, you lose Brooks Raley. That's unfortunate. It's a guy you can trade. But Luis Severino, I would like to get into the trade deadline talk now because I'm really ramping up here. Luis Severino has been very solid for the Mets. And honestly, it's been very, very cool to see, even though he's not with the Yankees anymore. I'm just happy. Exactly. Love, 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 love.
Love, Sebby.
Even though he's not in the Navy pinstripes anymore, it's good to see that he's, you know, the dominant pitcher that he once was. Not, you know, Cy Young vote dominant, but better than what he had been for the last, you know, four seasons or so. And he's really become the ace of this Mets team. You can trade him. He's on a one-year contract. You're telling me that someone wouldn't want to trade for a Luis Severino as like a three starter?
Oh, Yankees should trade for a Luis Severino. Get him back.
Bring him back. Luis Severino's a name, but I really want to get your guys' temperature here on Pete Alonso. The thought of Pete Alonso not being a Met this season, let alone leaving in free agency, not being a Met this season. I could realistically see that being a real possibility. I don't really think they should shell out a bunch of dollars to him, because I think Mark Vientos should end up being that guy at first base. He's shown it now. He showed it before they sent him down. And he works a lot with Carlos Mendoza at first base. So what do you guys think? Let's start with you, Nick, on the possibility of Pete Alonso being traded this season. And what could the Mets get for a Pete Alonso right now?
I would love to see him as a Chicago Cub.
It's a good fit.
In the future, be a great fit. They need a first baseman. They need to hit a couple more tanks. Belly can't do it alone. And they actually have a chance of making the postseason. So why not do that for Pete Alonso? I think he'd look good in other pinstripes, as you mentioned. But yeah, you could get some good returns for Pete Alonso. I think you should definitely ask for prospects. If the Mets go for MLB-ready players, they are making a huge mistake. Maybe one MLB-ready player, but I'm serious. I would love for the Mets to get a great pitching prospect. If they can get a great pitching prospect, a good starting pitcher, that's something you can actually build a team around. The hitting will come by itself. I mean, Brandon Nimmo, honestly, you look at his Savant, it's a lot of red there. He is a very, very underrated player. And that's why I think batting average is super deceptive, because hitting .266, you wouldn't think it. OPS of .821. Anyone with an OPS of over 800, I consider to be a very quality player. Yeah, the hitting will come. You can always trade for hitting pieces. They need a starter to build their team around, and that's what I think they should be going after.
I definitely do not think Pete Alonso will be on the Mets when the trade deadline is over. I see him going somewhere else. I think he's going to stay in the National League. I don't see him coming over to the American League. I'd also like to see them get another really good starting pitcher. Maybe another addition to the bullpen, though, as we were talking about before with Edwin Diaz, you know, slipping, not really recovering from his injury, as we all hoped. Maybe someone to, like, have him lean on so maybe there's not as much pressure in the closing era. But I think it'll be so smart if the Mets do not keep him. Like, don't let him go into free agency. Let him go somewhere else. The Mets won't have to deal with Scott Boras, and then they're able to help their farm system out, see what else is going around in the majors, and then just grow from there. Because right now, the entire team is Pete Alonso. The minute you get rid of him, you get to see other people shining through. And I think that's really what the Mets need to do. They need to move their focus from their older players that have not brought them the success they want, and then see what else is there for them.
And they already have some solid pitching prospects right now. And to add to that would be amazing. Number one, could be a starter. Number two, failed starter turned into a really good relief pitcher that will aid Edwin Diaz, who's still going to be under contract for at least 3 years. Just kind of goes to, I will die on this hill, goes to why you cannot give relief pitchers $20 million a year.
And remember, I think the Mets had their best chance when they had that elite core of starting pitcher. Remember when they had DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey?
Yeah.
That was
all homegrown
awesome.
Guys.
That was awesome. All homegrown guys. That's when I think they had the best chance. Yeah, the hitting didn't come through in the way they needed it to, but at least they were making the playoffs and making it interesting. You know, I mean, this team just looks dead in the water, and let's build the pitching back up. That's where it all needs to start. Because, well, yeah, I agree. Relievers are great, but you have to have a lead in order to be able to close it out. So
the Yankees, well, let's just look at the Yankees, not to compare the two, to go big brother, little brother kind of thing. It's just the bullpen comparison. The Yankees are a good example of how a bullpen could be crafted. You don't need to spend top dollar all the time to get a good bullpen. Now, when you want to get a closer that is as good as Edwin Diaz, and he is a good closer when he's got it clicking, but there's been a lot of times, especially in his Mets tenure, where it's just like, where was the Edwin Diaz that we saw the year before? Or the Seattle Edwin Diaz? Where is that guy? Where was the contract year Edwin Diaz, who missed almost all of last year and is, you know, not what he was the year before he signed that big contract? But like I was saying, these pitchers can turn into relief pitchers. Look at Josh Hader. He was a starting pitcher and turned into one of the best closers in baseball. But Christian Scott, I'm not going to name all of them because I don't know all of them, but Blake Tidwell, Mike Vassell, those are the three that I've heard big stuff about. And I know Vassell's really solid too, and he's just about MLB ready, if not on his way here, knocking on the doorstep. There are guys that will be impactful pitchers for the Mets. They also have a ton of really solid infielders and outfielders. Their second best prospect is Drew Gilbert, who is a bona fide outfielder. He's going to probably take over for Starling Marte. Jet Williams is an infielder outfielder right now. Luis Angel Acuna, Ronald Acuna's brother, can play the outfield. Ronnie Mauricio, a name that has been completely forgotten because he got hurt in winter ball. He is going to, honestly, I think he's going to flex Brett Beatty out of the equation. That
Brett
guy,
Beatty cannot, he swings at so many pitches that aren't strikes. This guy cannot hit a baseball. When he makes contact, Brett Beatty hits it a mile. Absolutely, don't get me wrong. But yeah, this guy strikes out way too much.
Defense has been really solid. In his third, I think it's his third year now, fourth year, but that's where they're kind of out of Brett Beatty. It's like, is he going to pan out? I don't know. I would put more eggs in the Mauricio basket than Brett Beatty, to be honest. Switch hitter has a lot of pop. I think he'll grow into the contact, and he's already a very solid defender with speed. At least in my estimation, Colin Houck, they drafted him in the first round last year. Still have Kevin Parada down there with Francisco Alvarez hurt. So Kevin Parada, don't really know what's going to happen with him. Could be one of those guys that you use to trade for a major league ready piece when the time is right, if that is, you know, where the Mets are at. So I think you look at Luis Severino, you look at Harrison Bader, you look at JD Martinez, and you say, we could at least get two prospects for JD Martinez, a designated hitter who has a World Series ring, who was an all-star at 35 years old and is not playing like he did with the Dodgers last year, but is still having a very competent season for not having a spring training whatsoever, going He's just about 6 months unsigned, and here he is now playing pretty solidly. You can get some value for him. The Mets have a lot of guys they can get value for. So are there any other names out there, guys, on the Mets that you think could be moved this trade deadline? And what do you think they could get for them? Anybody?
That's all I've got.
Sean
Manaea? could be a possibility. It's tough. It's tough with the Mets. The Mets are the Mets. That's all I can really say. And the best way to end the Mets conversation is focus on the farm system, please, because you will be better for it. You will 100% be better for it. And this year, just kind of let it be this year. Let's go around the MLB before we wrap up our episode of Nosebleeds here. Let's go down to Houston. There's definitely a problem in Houston. Absolutely. They started really poorly, picked it up, and the AL West, being the Mariners and the Rangers, did not do a good job of capitalizing on how bad Houston was in April. They had a great beginning to May, kind of faltered towards the end there. And now, big news, Jose Urquidy and Christian Javier, two guys that have pitched in meaningful World Series games for this team over the last 8 years or so, for them specifically the last like 4 years or so, both getting Tommy John surgery. Javier is a definite Tommy John surgery. Urquidy, it's a strong possibility. Lauren, I'll go to you first. Is it over for the Astros for this year? What can you expect from the Houston Astros right now?
I think the Houston Astros are severely missing Dusty Baker right now. But I really just don't see it. They would need to go on an insane run. I think it's possible, because if you look back at the Phillies in 2022-2023 season, they were 22-29 on June 1st. And then they ended up finishing the season 87-75 and made it to the World Series. So it is possible for them to go on a crazy run, but a lot would need to go right for them, and they would need to be very strategic at this trade deadline. But if we're looking at Javier, he has not been himself for the past two seasons. He shined in 2022 World Series, as you just said, but ever since, he's had like around a 4.44 ERA, and his strikeout rate has just declined greatly. So I'm kind of like hopeful for him that this injury is going to heal him and like help him reflect on these past two seasons, and then he'll just be able to grow back to what we saw in that World Series in 2022. And then as for Urquidy, I'm a little scared for him. This is going to be his second Tommy John, if that's the road they take. And we've seen like time and time again, a second Tommy John surgery is never really what anyone wants. I saw an article that Jeff Zimmerman published in 2023. He was just studying pitchers after they returned from their second Tommy John. And he just showed like first season and then the second season after they returned. And it was just their ERA jumped significantly after that second season. And they're never the same again. So it's just like a scary situation for Houston. And I really think they have to take a step back, say the season's a loss, and then try again next season.
This team is screwed. This team is absolutely screwed. I mean, Christian Javier, Lance McCullers, Urquidy, Garcia, JP France is out. He's been actually having a pretty good year. So you're left with two years, right?
Something like that. Oh, crazy.
Yeah, McCullers. It's crazy. This team is beyond screwed. Justin Verlander. Look, he's going to end the year probably with a 3.25, which is not Justin Verlander standards, but I don't think he's ever going to exceed the year he had 2 years ago last year. Framber Valdez is great, but two pitchers aren't going to carry this rotation when you have Spencer Arrigetti as your five starter and Hunter Brown as your four. I mean, it's just not going to work like that. You can hit as much as you like, but I don't see a world in with which this team can catch the Rangers. The Rangers have had their fair share of struggles. It's nowhere close to what the Astros are going through right now.
Yeah, those bottom two guys in Arrigetti and Brown, too, specifically Brown, have been extremely disappointing. Hunter Brown was a top prospect for them at some point during his minor league days, and he's
6.18.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. It's so bad. He's got really good stuff. Maybe it's just a sophomore slump for him, but who knows? The Astros in a lot of danger, in my opinion, right now. I was a big advocate of it's still early when they were really slumping. Now you're getting to June, and you're not only losing guys in June, you're losing them for the rest of the year and probably parts of next year. Kyle Tucker, at the very least, is putting up an MVP-esque kind of season. Yordan Alvarez isn't quite at that level, but still a very solid season from him. So you still have those two guys to bank on, but Altuve's not getting any younger. Alex Bregman has also been horrendous, and he's in a contract year as well. Let's just pull up Alex Bregman's numbers right now, because I remember when they were playing the Yankees for the second time, it was just awful. All right, he's turned it around a little bit. He's got 9 home runs and 29 RBIs. He's batting .230, .292 on base, and a .404 slugging. Still not great whatsoever. He's definitely turned it around, but not the Alex Bregman that was second in MVP in 2019 and now entering a contract year. It could be the end of Bregman in Houston, but lots of issues. Kyle Tucker is definitely not one of them, as I was mentioning, and definitely a guy that they should look to extend because he's coming up on an expiring contract here before long. It was actually, it'll be after this, after next season, he will be a free agent. He's got 19 home runs and 40 RBIs, 10 stolen bases as well. Speed threat, gets on base almost 40% of the time. Great defender as well. So there's still areas the Astros can look to keep their kind of core. It's kind of dwindling though from when they first started winning. So yeah, the Houston Astros not looking great whatsoever. But to wrap up our episode of Nosebleeds, the Chicago White Sox, just one team that was thrown out there. We'll do some overall deadline thoughts, and not even predictions, just thoughts. Right now, the biggest name I think that's been thrown out there for the deadline has been Garrett Crochet, generating a lot of trade interest from the San Diego Padres, who are definitely not afraid to make trades whatsoever. They already acquired Luis Arraez from the Miami Marlins, and Garrett Crochet, 5-5 with a 3.49 ERA, but 93 strikeouts. That's just one name that comes to mind and has garnered some interest, though. But what do you guys think about Crochet and potentially other names that come to mind that could be on the move come July 30th?
Michael Kopech isn't that bad. I know a lot of people say he's bad. He's actually not that bad. You could get some good value for him. What are the White Sox, like 15-45?
Yeah,
see,
something really
this
bad.
Is the Mets need to take a page out of the Marlins book. They sold Arraez on May 3rd. That's when they knew this season was over, like actually a month into the year. So recognize when it's done. I think the White Sox are going to get some really good pieces. Tommy Pham, for some reason, is having a great year. I think he's a jerk. Did you see that play that when he ran into Contreras at home plate?
I heard about it, and there was like
it was
cleared, I think, right?
He was out by about he was out as soon as he rounded third, and Contreras is not blocking the plate. He's standing about a foot in front of the plate because he knows he has Pham dead to rights. Pham runs on the infield grass and trucks Contreras the entire way. This guy is a jerk. He's filthy. He punched my boy Jock Peterson in the face over a fantasy league. this guy is not a good guy. He said he's ready to F anyone up as at the end of the game. He's hitting 280 though. So I don't know. Maybe get some value for him. You got to keep Luis Robert. Just when he's healthy, he's so great. Poor White Sox, man. I feel bad for them.
Whenever I hear of a trade between the White Sox and the Padres, I know the story is about to be so good because they have the oddest trade timeline. Giving Dylan Cease to the Padres right before the start of the season was so huge. So I'm not really against Crochet going to the Padres. I think that would make a great story. And the Padres have a lot of big names, so they should be a better team than they are playing. And adding Crochet to that, you know, rotation will really help them out in the long run. But I think Crochet still is a very young player, so it is very risky. He's only making $800,000 this year, which is a low considering how well he has been playing. But he's just always on the injured list, it seems like. And with him playing as well, always on the injured list, you know his free agency is going to be right around the corner and he's going to be the healthiest he's ever been, asking for a lot of money. So I don't think it's an awful idea for the White Sox to say, hey, take a trip down to the West Coast, play there for a little bit. We'll see you later.
Garrett Crochet, former first-round pick, also one of the only players to not play in the minor leagues and just go straight to the major leagues. But it seems like the Angels, even the A's, Mason Miller has garnered a lot of trade interest. I don't really know what kind of stance I'd even take on that. If I'm the A's, you can look into it. Is he going to be there for the entire rebuild? I don't know. I really don't know. He was one of your top prospects and now you're already looking to trade him. So you could definitely get a lot for him because he's got like 5 years of control. So we're talking like multiple prospects, but I don't really know if you're the A's, if you should do that. Will the Astros be sellers? Maybe. They're a big maybe. Look at a team like the Angels, though. Angels are tough, too, because they don't really develop talent that well other than Mike Trout. They were kind of gifted Shohei Ohtani at that time, and Mike Trout's been one of the only big prospects to really pan out for them over the last 10 years. Toronto Blue Jays, another interesting case. Will they be sellers at the deadline? Some names that they could definitely cut loose on. The Marlins, I wonder if Jazz Chisholm comes up at all. Are they looking to move on and tear it all down? I feel like every time the Marlins make the playoffs or get close to it, it's over the next year and it's time to rebrand and retool and rebuild and do everything that you possibly can. The Pirates aren't really in a situation where they have to do anything. I think the Cardinals make another good case as well. They're kind of like in limbo. Will they be hot for the end of the All-Star break? I don't know. The Rockies, for the last team that I will mention, they're, I would say, in the same boat as the Pirates. What can you possibly do? I don't know. Probably have to wait until the off season. But just a little baseline talk of the trade deadline coming up July 30th. You'll probably hear a lot more of the deadline coming up on future episodes of Nosebleeds right up until that July 30th. Deadline. But that is going to do it for this edition of Nosebleeds. The Yanks, they continue to roll on. The Mets kind of metting it up right now. Those Astros got a problem. Houston, we definitely have a problem. And that MLB trade deadline is going to, you know, it's going to be a hot topic for the next 5 or 6 weeks, and it's just going to continue to get hotter. But for Nick Palmer and Lauren Mondarulli, I'm Will Talent, and thank you for tuning in to Nosebleeds, a production of WFUV Sports. Mm-hmm.